The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Sarah Meadows.
Amy Eggs.
Melissa Delp.
Kevin Delp.
And apprentice Dan.
Apprentice Dan.
In the house.
Ooh, apprentice Dan, I almost forgot your name.
That was okay.
It's okay. We're glad you're here, apprentice Dan. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Is this the second week in a row? He's like the 156th episode. I'm going to be here for the 157th episode.
And now I can say my name almost, apprentice Dan.
We have Will's not here with us. Ryan and Katie are headed off to visit family. Larry is about to take his real sidekick. Larry is doing his real estate license test.
Sidekick Larry.
I was confused on that too.
He's psychic too.
I mean, if he passes this test,
does he have a magic head?
Oh, magic head. That's good. From psych. Nice.
I mean, it's big, but
magical. Well, good. Hopefully he passes. That's good.
Yep. And Jonah and Chantel are also on vacation.
Oh, yes. Jonah and Chantel. Maybe they'll be back sometime too. They missed a couple episodes in a row.
Yeah. Well, when you have a little tiny baby, sometimes it's hard to stay up late at night when you haven't been getting sleep. So,
speaking of playing games, we played Control tonight. Amy, Katie, Melissa, and myself. What'd you think of Control?
Going into it, I was pretty confident. Like, I got this. I got these cubes. I can do this. And then I lost miserably. But it was fun. I liked it.
Yeah, I was reading the rules and I do have a little bit of trouble with area control games, and this is area control, and it's also three-dimensional, so I'm trying to think in three dimensions and area control, and I said, Kevin, look at this and make sure I'm interpreting the rules correctly.
So if you're not familiar with Control, it's a new release from Pandasaurus Games. Think of a three-dimensional cube. And everyone has their own sort of little cubes, like think Legos, but only they're only one by ones. And on your turn, you're placing three cubes in a line on this tower, this big cube. And you're basically trying to have the most cubes seen on all five sides because you don't look at the bottom because that's sort of like
the table. It's just on the table.
So at the end of the game, you look at each side and you count the cube colors that you see, and whoever has the most cube colors that you can see at the end of the game wins. I miscounted the first time and totally missed a side, which I'm glad I recounted. Maybe we should have recounted everyone's.
Right, because Kevin won after his recount, but we probably should have recounted everyone's side.
I think I got five more points at the end.
I know, amazing. I think I actually came in second, even though I'm not great at area control games. And if you're looking for this, it's Control without any of the vowels. So like the control key on your keyboard.
Yeah, just think of your control key on your keyboard. That's how people spell it nowadays anyway. So
yeah, all those texting lingo and stuff. I'm not quite up to date with that.
The one thing I did find interesting is it's not just placing cubes and passing it. You have little poles, flags. Tell us a little bit. Yes, tell us, Amy. What do you like about that?
Well, the flag fits into your cube on any side. So wherever an opposing flag is, you can't place cubes there. So you can kind of block off and strategically kind of protect your area based on how you place that flag. So I think it's my favorite part.
I agree. I was trying to figure out how to best block others, but sort of control my stake in the land. I guess I did okay, but it was
pats himself on the back.
I guess I did okay. But I think we were talking about, like, if you can get to the top spot of the cube, then you're seeing your cube from all five sides because you're looking at the top and all the other four sides. So eventually tried to get to the top. Yeah. Melissa, what happened?
I mean, I came in second, so, I mean, it wasn't terrible for me. I had some on the top, Kevin had some on the top, and we were kind of kept covering each other's cubes.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Katie were at the bottom. Oh, bad strat.
I think so. I think it is trying to, I think it's like sort of win the mountain and try and get to the top is very, very key to winning control. You can play this 2, 3, or 4 player. If you play 2 player, you control 2 colors. And 3 player, you just do 3 colors and then 4. Each person gets a color.
And it's a pretty quick game, probably like 20, 30 minutes, depending on how long people take.
Yeah, strategizing, right? I think with 4 player, it was closer to 30 minutes, but still, 20, 30 minutes for it, it's pretty cool. We put some pictures up on our social media you can check out. It definitely has a nice table presence for it. The colors are cool. Packs pretty nicely in the box. So, yeah, check out Control from Pandasaurus. What else? What else have you guys been playing?
Well, this week I got to teach Ryan how to play Keyforge, so that was exciting for him to pull that out.
Cool. Is this like 2 years later?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It's been out for two years.
But he finally got to it. He hadn't even opened his original deck. But
you should have like kept him sealed.
I know.
It could have been like
worth
collector's
a lot.
Items.
Yeah. He won. It's, you know, you could debate whether or not I let him win. I did not choose to lose. It was more like, Ryan, are you sure you want to play that card right now? Because here's what that's going to do. And so he pulled a number of things back. But no, he won. He had a good time. He finished the day by saying, yeah, I think I want to try that again sometime. So had a good time with that. Tonight we played my wife's favorite game, Atlantis.
Which is an older title.
Yes. I want to say it's around 2012 by Mayfair. And it's, I guess, worker movement. It's, I don't know. You've got a path that goes from Atlantis to whatever island your mainland you're trying to get to. And you play a card that lets you get to, you know, if the card is gold, you get to the first gold space in the path. And then you take the tile in front of it. So as you remove tiles, the path changes. So Kevin may play a gold, but now he has to go somewhere else based on what the path looks like.
So is it sort of like Takedo or Parks, or like is that just not a good example?
No. Okay. Yeah, I don't think I would go. I'm not as familiar with Takedo. I think I've played it once, but
it's like Parks where you're basically going down a path.
No. Okay. You're trying to get all three of your people to the end, and that's it. You're not going back like Parks. But I guess in some ways, some of the movement is similar, except you're limited by what cards you have in your hand, and then you gain
Luxor.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of that. You get, you know, the tiles are your points, cards are your points at the end of the game. We played it with Brian, and he took right to it, and he won.
We were playing Control on the other side of the table, and it sounded like he was really enjoying.
He was.
Like, I like this game
because it is one of those games. I haven't really fell into the analysis paralysis thing, but you could sit there and really analyze, well, if I play white, I'm going to go here and get 2 points, but if I play gold, I'll get 5, and, you know, really break down what you're going to do. Brian seemed to enjoy it. Ryan, on the other hand, seemed to get a little bit of bad luck because the colors he started with were all heavily at the beginning of the path. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm not getting anywhere. Meanwhile, Amy and Brian are just racing to the end, but despite that, Ryan did not lose. I lost. I scored a whopping 3 points.
That does not sound good, Dan.
It's not. It's pretty terrible. Not sure how it happened. Brian won the game with 28, so pretty good point spread. But we had a lot of fun with that.
Cool. What else have you guys been playing? Sleeving Gloomhaven, Amy Eggs?
Yeah, we spent a good hour and a half last night just sleeving the starter character cards, going through, reading all the titles. That was pretty fun.
So you guys have played Jaws of the Lion, the Target version, but you decided, let's go in for the big box, Gloomhaven.
Yeah, we played one round of Jaws of the Lion, and Larry decided to buy Gloomhaven and Frosthaven. So
I will say, playing Gloomhaven and playing Frosthaven, I played a prototype of Frosthaven. I enjoyed Frosthaven much better. I feel like he really streamlined some of the rules and some of the gameplay, and there's a little bit more mystery and adventure going on in Frosthaven. So just letting you know, Frosthaven, to me, is the better of the two.
We were flipping through the book, and I was like, there are 94 scenarios in this book.
But
so
you're not going to
play one a week. This is going to take us a really long time.
You won't do all 94 because of branching paths. Got it. Yeah, I think you could probably do about 80, but still a lot.
Only 80.
Still a year and a half. Still,
yeah. Yep. So glad you sleeved the Gloomhaven. Are you going to paint the miniatures?
Yes, probably.
Okay.
We still have our Lord of the Rings miniatures we got to paint too.
Journeys to Middle Earth? Mm-hmm. Oh, those are good. Melissa and I just started playing the
Shadowed Paths.
Shadowed Paths, which is the new expansion that just came out.
It's the one that has Gandalf in it and Arwen, and I think there's a Balrog and lots of spiders.
Lots of spiders.
So it kind of has Mirkwood and Moria. Yeah,
they're kind of freaky looking because the spiders are as big as the character miniatures. Ugh. I know, right?
Those would get smashed.
I just like put them next to like Melissa's character and like...
When we're not looking, Kevin will put them on the board even if they're not in the scenario.
Just for fun.
And then you'll look and your character has all these spiders on
them. Don't look away from the board is what I say. So...
So quick question on Gloomhaven. Does it matter at all what order you play them in? Like Gloom versus Frost? Do they build on each other?
No, they're two different campaigns. Okay. Yeah. I think if you played Gloomhaven, you're going to be able to play Frosthaven faster or not, maybe not faster as a word, but you're so familiar with how Gloomhaven plays, it's going to be easier to play
Frosthaven. But you could probably flip that, right? And play Frosthaven and Gloomhaven. Okay.
Sure. I think Frosthaven does add, like I said, a little bit more mystery. There's a little bit more things going on. So having the Gloomhaven or even Jaws of the Lion knowledge is really going to make Frosthaven more accessible.
And it may be more exciting then. Whereas if you play Frosthaven and it's better and then you go to Gloomhaven, you're like, eh.
Right. Okay. I think you'd get a letdown playing Frosthaven first. So.
Still haven't played either of them, obviously, but one of these days.
The one thing I will say that I like Jaws of the Lion better, I think Jonah even said that, and Jonah and Chantel did said in their review, the way that you set up the game with the book is much easier for you to start playing than Gloomhaven, because Gloomhaven, the setup time is a bear.
Oh, okay.
So you're like set up for 20 to 30 minutes because you have to find all the... different pieces that are going to go on, find the terrain, find what's going into the terrain, finding all that kind of stuff. It's because it's, and I would say one way of making it better so that the setup is easier is organization of the pieces. So if you can organize the pieces and know where things are and not just put it in a bag, like literally you have a bag of like 100 like monsters or like 100 rocks or whatever, and you're looking for a certain type of monster, it can take a while, so.
Buy some stock in Ziploc.
Right. There you go. Melissa?
So, something Kevin and I have been playing, and it's not out yet, but it's coming out soon, is Super Skill Pinball 4Kade. And this is by WizKids and designed by Jeff Engelstein. And it is a pinball-themed roll-and-write game. And the box comes with four different pinball tables and supplies for up to four players. And basically you roll two dice, choose one of the results, and you can move your pinball on the page to an area that matches the pip value. And this ball is kind of, think of a pinball, but it's been cut in half, so it's flat on the side that sits
so on. It's easily moved on your board.
So it's 3D, looks like a ball from the top view, but it's flat, and it's really feels like pinball, the mechanics that they put into this game. And I love pinball. I've grown up playing
pinball, but not like in real time. It's not like you have to make like quick decisions, but you do make decisions,
right? So for example, you start at the top of the board, roll the dice, everyone chooses, so it's simultaneous play. Once everyone has resolved their result, then you roll the dice again. And in most spots, you have to move down the table. There are a few areas like bumpers where you can go back and forth in the same zone, but basically it's like gravity is pulling your ball down. And you're crossing off spaces with your dry erase marker. So once it's crossed off, that space isn't available again. So You're reducing your number of options. Mm-hmm. You have two colored flippers, red and yellow, and certain objects on the board are colored red or yellow, so the red flipper will only go to the red things, and the yellow flipper will only go to the yellow things. There are a few that are white that either flipper can go to, so you're kind of deciding, which flipper do I want my ball to end up on? Oh, I rolled a three. I don't have a three available on the yellow flipper. I need to go to the red flipper. Eventually, you'll run out of spots and your ball will drain. Cool thing is, a lot of the targets and things, once you knock down all the targets, kind of like in a real pinball machine, they reset and you get a bonus. So you can dry erase, you can erase those things, and now those are available again to use. So it's a lot of the strategy of pinball without having to have the coordination.
There's four tables. The first, the easy board, is like a carnival theme. Mm-hmm. Then you have a sort of...
Cyber hacker.
Then the Dragon Slayer. I saw Dan looking at that one right away. I pulled it out here while we were talking. Well, his eyes got big over here.
And the whole thing, like Kevin was pulling it out just now, it just looks really pretty. It's super colorful. Mm-hmm. It's bright. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, the one Kevin just mentioned, the Dragon Slayer, actually feels a little RPG-ish because you can level up your character and learn spells and then use the spells, which are like change the die value by one or score this area, things like that. So it even gives you more control of how you manipulate the dice.
That was my favorite level because it helps you mitigate a lot of your mistakes that I make. So Melissa did really well on boards that you have to be way very strategic. And like the Dragon Slayer one, I was like, save the ball. The other boards, you don't have to worry. The other boards, there's no way to save the ball, right?
Most of them, right. Yeah.
So, and then the last board is a dance 70s, 60s, 70s theme. So that supposedly is the hardest, although I will say... I mean, maybe because we played the other three first, it didn't seem as difficult. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I would need to. I have played all four of them now. I'd like to try several of them again, kind of knowing how the different boards work now. Some of them give you multi-ball options, so now you have two of the balls on your board. And the two dice you roll, one is assigned to one ball and the other is assigned. The other die is assigned to
the other ball. Good and bad.
Good and bad. And you can get double scoring and all of that. One thing that some people might not like is people's games can end at different times. Mm-hmm. You get three balls, kind of like pinball, and say Kevin's really bad and drains his balls.
Like drains my balls, yep. Yep, just goes down the drain.
I could be playing for another 15, 20 minutes if I'm really, really good at it. So it is pretty solitaire, even if you're playing with other people. I love it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I will say I enjoyed it more once I played the Dragon Slayer one because of how you can exchange your die and save your ball and things like that. I will say I got into an infinity loop. So I could basically, I had the spells that basically let me erase everything and then start going and then get multi-ball and get double score. And then I did the spell again that let me erase all my... Like, because once you activate a spell, what's it called? Like, activating a spell?
Casting
a spell. You can, once you cast it, you can't recast it until you, like, erase.
Until you clear it.
Clear it.
Rest is the term.
Yeah, so I was resting, being able to recast all my spells, recast. So I was going this infinite loop. I was probably 600 some points, which is doing super well.
Yeah, I probably should have kept a closer look. I'm sure Kevin cheated somehow.
So if you're not quick with pinball games in general, this might be the game for you.
This is definitely the game. You enjoy the...
I don't know if that's a prototype, but
this is the real game.
What was that, the surface of the board? It didn't look like just cardboard, was it?
No, it's something that... It's like a poster board, like you would with a erasable marker.
It just looked really
shiny. So it's
shiny, and
it's kind of that... It's not quite laminate, but
it's a dry erase.
Yeah, like a dry erase board, so...
With very bright colors and very detailed.
This is coming out really soon. It might just currently be available. You can check online or at your local store called Super Skill Pinball 4Cade from WizKids. And like I said, it plays... I say each game, it says 30 minutes, but I would say it's probably closer to 45 minutes to an hour. The Dragon Slayer
one. Depending on how well you do.
Dragon Slayer one, I was past an hour, just kept playing. And I was like, in my second ball with, I was on my second ball with over 600 points. And I just was like, I'm done. I'm like, I could just literally just keep playing and never stop. I mean, I'm sure eventually I would like lose, but I was like, I've already maxed out the most highest score. So I probably cheated.
At least you're honest.
Yeah.
Cool.
I taught Melissa Sonora. Sarah taught me this a couple weeks ago, and we said, could we borrow it? Because Melissa was interested in it. It's another roll and write type game, and this is a flick and write game. And Sarah, tell us about it.
So this is an interesting variant on having dice in a game. You have five discs, 1 through 5, and you flick them into the center area, and you can kind of choose, if you're skilled at flicking, you can get them to go where you want to go, but you may end up ricocheting off other people's discs, or they may try and hit you out of an area. So it's still going to be a little bit random where you end up, but it's less random than dice. So I did enjoy that, where you have a little more control than dice for just a normal roll and write or a dice worker placement type game. And then it's got 4 areas of the board that score. I found that you need to diversify and do 2 areas really well and focus on 2. And then you can kind of let the other 2 not do as well. I think that's the key.
I did very well at that. The second time I played...
Kevin did not clue me in on that strategy.
I was like, I'm going to let her find out. Just like Sarah did for me.
But
I was like,
we were only about 15 to 20 points.
She did well. Yeah.
You know, difference.
Nice. Yeah. I would say 2-player is much different than a 4-player game because there's not as much mayhem going on with people's discs flying around. Yes. Which I enjoyed the 3 or 4 player.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, I think I like it better with the chaos. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's more competitive, obviously, because you're going against 3 other people instead of just 1 other person. But it feels great when you knock a couple people out of the way instead of just the other opponent.
Yeah. I enjoy playing it. I'd like to play it again because it's one of those games, it is a dexterity game, but it's almost like a finesse dexterity when you're trying to flick those in the right spots.
And if you mess up, it doesn't matter because pretty much every disc is going to give you points somehow. Yep. So even if it doesn't go where you want, if you do it right, you can still get points. So it's okay.
Yeah, I do like that. I sometimes feel in some dexterity games, it's like, oh, well, that turn was a complete waste. Oh, well, that I just went backwards. Okay. All right, I guess I'll keep playing.
Well, we're going to jump into our news segment. Today in the news, we have 3 different items to talk about. There is a partnership between Spin Master and Roxley Games, and they announced Santorini, New York. This is for 2 to 5 players, and it plays in about 15 to 30 minutes. If you're familiar with Santorini, has anybody played Santorini?
No, I have not.
This is an abstract strategy game where you are playing, like in Santorini, you're playing white buildings and making Santorini, which is a cool like city. But this is Santorini, New York, which is kind of funny that they're using the same name, Santorini, but New York, where you're actually building New York instead. And instead of, like, Santorini has these, like, god powers. In New York, you have roles that you're playing. So I think there's going to be some similarities, but some differences, too, where you're moving your workers around, building up Manhattan, raising buildings and skyscrapers and things like that. And there's a cool little cute statue of the Statue of Liberty in it. So it looks pretty cool. And I think Santorini, the original game, had cute little miniatures, if you've seen the pictures of those. So that is coming from the partnership of Roxley and Spin Master. Melissa.
In galactic news, Dire Wolf Digital, this is the publishing company and design team behind Clank, is bringing Dune Imperium, a deck building meets worker placement in a new board game of galactic struggle. And that's about all that's known about it for now.
Well, it's a pretty popular IP, so hopefully we'll hear more soon. In breakups, we have Wizards of the Coast saying to ACD distribution, no longer an option. So ACD distributes a lot of the Wizards of the Coast stuff, like the Magic the Gathering, which is very, very big. And I think 40% of the ACD's business is made up of distributing Wizards of the Coast stuff, which is a big part of your business.
Yeah,
but no more.
But no more. And actually, ACD sued Wizards of the Coast, and there was a big battle, and Wizards of the Coast won that. So ACD is definitely on the losing end now, two times. So the one saving factor that I am reading in this article is that ACD did pick up the Asmodee USA line beginning July 1st. So they might be able to stay in business, even though they're losing Wizards of the Coast. So Dan's over there thinking.
It's interesting. Like you said, that's a huge hit if you're that company. Makes me wonder why, if it was just purely.
So Wizards of the Coast didn't re-up their license. So yeah. that was the main thing from that I read from the article. So
I wonder if that's going to affect MTG at all.
Yeah, we'll find out. I'm sure they have many other ways to get their product out. So, all right, now from a word from our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by Final Frontier Games. They've just announced that their new game, Monsters on Board, is going to be coming to Kickstarter this fall. We'll let you know when we have more details of a firm date.
And now to our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
This episode will be talking about four games coming to Kickstarter the week of August 17th, 2020. Start us off, Melissa. On August 18th, Queen Games is bringing the Steffenfeld City Collection to Kickstarter. They're starting off with two games, and these are going to be Hamburg, which is a re-implementation of Bruges, and then Amsterdam, which is a re-implementation of Macau.
We played Bruges.
We have. Yep. I think we own it.
We own Bruges.
Yes, somewhere, I know.
Somewhere in the house.
It is. I enjoyed it, what I remember of it.
We'll have to play
older games. They never get back to the table. But anyway, they are going to be bringing eight or more games from Steffenfeld in the City Collection, but it's going to be a multi-year project. So they're planning on doing two games each Kickstarter, and they're starting off with Hamburg and Amsterdam. This is a deluxe collection, so they might have some deluxified pieces and components. Steffenfeld has actually re-looked at the games and done some more design work on them, so areas that he thought maybe could be improved, he has been doing that with the designs. I know for Hamburg, it's going to have several of the expansions for the original Bruges are going to come in the game. The next two titles, which are coming in the future, are going to be New York City, which they have not announced what game that's re-implementing, and then Marrakesh, which is a new title. Mm-hmm. So if you like Steffenfeld games, I know Bruges has been out of print for a while. This is your chance to get the new version of the game.
And you can not only pledge for the first two, but you actually pledge for the second two as well.
Oh, I think really?
Yes, at a discount. So I was talking to Travis over at Queen Games about that.
Interesting. So definitely check out the Kickstarter if you are a Steffenfeld fan, and take a look to see what new things they're bringing to these classic games. And that is August 18th, the Steffenfeld City Collection. Kevin.
Also on August 18th, PDU Games is relaunching Syndicate, a game for 2 to 5 players. Jonah from our team really enjoyed playing this, and he and Chantel did a preview video that you can check out on our YouTube channel if you haven't already. This is a game of interplanetary conquest where you're completing missions, setting up your criminal operations, and trying to take down anyone that stands in your path to building the most formidable interplanetary criminal empire in the system. You can find out more on Jonah and Chantel's preview. Dan, what do you have?
All right. Also on August 18th, we have Uprising, Curse of the Last Emperor by Nemesis Games. It's a 1-4 player, fully cooperative, 4X type post-apocalyptic and dark fantasy war game. Man, that's a mouthful to say. It's a modular board. It has asymmetric faction powers where you and your friends are playing as factions with your own unique standees. They may have miniatures. I'm not sure. We're looking at...
They do have miniatures.
Okay. Everything I was seeing was prototype, so it will be miniature-based. So you have your own powers, and you're fighting two game-controlled factions, the Chaos and the Empire, and you're ultimately trying to get more points than the enemy game factions, and if you do that, you win the game. It is a 2-4 hour war game, so it's a bit heavier. It's rated around a 3.5 out of 5 on BGG. But if that's your thing, if you like, you know, with a modular board, player powers, there are events in the game, so the game changes every time you play it. There's going to be something that's different, gives it more replayability, and if you're looking for something in that dark fantasy realm, this might just be up your alley. Again, that is coming from Nemesis Games on August 18th, Uprising, Curse of the Last Emperor. Sarah.
Funky Fruit is coming to Kickstarter, and this is from Clever Unicorn Games and Wall Capital Games, and it's from designers Steve McLaughlin, Patrick Wall, and Chris Winterborn. And this is a card battle game. You are... and set collection, you have your own little fruit basket, and you are trying to put together the best basket of fruit. And in the game, you will be adding cards to your hand and swapping out what you have in your basket. There are some cards that allow you to change out what you have in your basket. It may allow you to give stuff to your opponents that they may not want. So there's a little bit of take that in there, and there's a little bit of luck with what you draw in the deck. But for the most part, it's a quicker 20-30 minute game that you can play with 2-5 players. And it's got super fun illustrations of lots of different kinds of fruit. I know the setup for the lower player counts has a lot more variability, replayability with the game, because you will only pick certain types of fruit to play with, so you can switch that out every time you play. The higher player counts, it becomes more difficult to get what you want. There's certain cards that are just straight up points. Some of them score that have collecting specific sets of things. So you can have 10 things in your basket, and you're just trying to swap out what you can before the end of the game. It almost reminded me a little bit of Bonanza without the trading.
I like Bonanza. I like the trading part of Bonanza.
I do like the trading part of Bonanza. This one doesn't have the trading, but you are trying to do that set collection specifically in your hand. There's a hand limit that you have to follow. So it kind of felt like that, although Bonanza you had to keep your cards in a specific order. You don't have to do that for this.
It's like the one thing that people always mess up on.
It is.
Not in Funky Fruit, though. You don't care.
Okay. It doesn't matter what, but there is a specific hand limit, and if you go over, you have to start trashing cards. So you end up trashing stuff you want, or there are mayhem cards that come in that require you to trash things, and then you start losing points, so you have to try and get it fixed before the end of the game. So interesting little card game. It's called Funky Fruit.
Speaking of Bonanza, since we're done our Kickstarter connection segment, Anyway, they just announced another expansion to Bonanza.
Really?
Did you know that they have been like pushing out expansions like every few years? It's Excalibon or something like that. It's like an Excalibur theme.
Interesting.
Themed. They have a lot of those kinds of like
puns
in their games. Melissa and I, probably Bonanza was one of the earlier games that we would play the bean game with and learned early in our board gaming hobbyist career. But
same here.
Yeah.
And
it was one
I hate to admit this.
Uh-oh.
Will learned the rules.
You all know where this is going.
So you basically played it
wrong. We played wrong for a year and a half before we realized we actually liked the way that Will
had played.
Messed up and played out better. Well, we figured out right away that we were playing wrong because I was like, this doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then changed the rules, but we didn't change them correctly.
Mm.
So it was still fun. It was easier. So I think that's part of the reason that we liked it. We loosened the rules on what with you were allowed to have in your bean fields.
Yeah, bean fields.
And your amount of trading.
Oh, yes. I think we played Bonanza wrong as well the first few times. We let third party trading.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We do that all the time.
Yeah. That's like, totally against the rules.
Yes. Dan, if I give you a stink bean and you give that stink bean to Sarah for her green bean.
Well, Sarah,
yes.
That's totally fun to play, but not in the rules.
Yes.
But I was saying is I think keeping your cards in a specific order is one of the things that everyone, even like new people, old players, it's like so difficult because you want to put like colors together or numbers together, but you can't. You have to keep the beans in the order that was given to you.
It's kind of like Hanabi or something where you can't look at cards or any sort of thing where you can't look at a card when you draw it. Yeah, that's difficult.
Yes. So I was thinking about our Kickstarters and our games that we play. Hey, Sunny, the bunny's here. She's having fun with us under the table. Anyway, and a lot of people talk about the cold of the new for board games, cold of the like old, cold of the like the past. I had like a few months ago, like people were like, oh, they're talking about cold of the new. Or they're talking about games and talking about, are you like part of the cold of the new or are you part of the cold of the past? I commented like, I'm part of the cold of the future. And like, there are people that start commenting like, what does that mean? What's cold of the future?
Games that aren't
right
a game yet.
Right, games that aren't a game yet. And people like were like, their minds were like, not blown, but they were thinking about that. It's like, yes, because a lot of what we do is about Kickstarters that
even pre-releases of published games that might not be available for several months. And we have, and we're playing, and...
Yes, I saw a game that was recently mailed that we just got in the mail, and we're like, should we even start playing it yet? Because it's not going to be released for another couple months.
And it's embargoed, and
right.
We can't even say what it is, or anything about it, or what the publisher is.
So, and then I was listening to the Dice Tower today, and... they were talking about Cold of the New, and he used the word Cold of the Future, and then he used the Cold of the Future. And I was like, what's Cold of the Future? And then he was saying, what Kickstarters are you interested in the future? I was like, he's like, that's just way too far. But I deal with Cold of the Future all the time because I'm looking at games that will be Kickstarted in October, November, and December that you won't even see until 2021, 2022. It's crazy thinking about that.
Yep, and then there's beyond that is playtesting and developing games that aren't even to the point of talking about Kickstarter yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just keeps going further and further away.
Like the Search for Planet X, we saw it
at... Oh, a prototype, yes.
A prototype
back in 2017, 2018, yeah.
It was before it even got picked up by a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then to see it in its final form, and that was really... cool to kind of see part of that process.
So along those lines, because I know, you know, in music and movie industries, they deal with that where it may take you 2 years to come out with an album or something. So you're kind of guessing on where people's interests are going to be. Do you feel like that plays into board games at all, where you're making a game that right now would be super hot, but in 2-3 years, meh?
I think it does. I think publishers have to gauge what they think the market's doing. And theme is one that sometimes there are games that are almost the exact same game,
because we just went through a rash of like gardening and plant games.
There was
like,
bee games recently. Yeah.
Well, and I would say pirate games. So, and now you have retail and you have Kickstarter. So Forgotten Waters by Plaid Hat just actually came out. People can buy it and play it. And then Dead Reckoning is on Kickstarter. That's not going to be out for a while. You have Sleeping Gods that kickstarted a little while back, but still is going to be a while. Mm-hmm. So people are anticipating and wanting these games. But by the time they get to them, either they've cooled on that, you know, theme, or other games have come out in the meantime.
That were maybe even similar to gameplay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
So it is an interesting cycle.
I was also looking at our calendar, speaking of Cult of the Future, Cult of the Now, Cult of the New.
Okay, let me...
Oh, sorry.
What are you saying? Cult? C-U?
Cult.
Or cult.
Okay. Cult. I can be more clear. I'm sorry.
Okay. Because I thought you were talking about, like, culling.
Well, we can cull. We need to cull games all the time, Dan.
Okay, so Cult. I'm
Cult
with you
of
now.
The New, yes. Currently, we just did some live videos. So if you're listening to this week, we just did our Saturday Morning Board Game Show this past week, our Tantrum Talks, and had some other live videos this week. We have some videos coming out. Marvel United. I think Will has played this already.
Yep, he has. Now, he has only played the Spin Master version.
Okay.
So we'll see. I know the Kamon version.
Right.
CMON
version.
Is coming out soonish.
They're supposed to be different in some ways, not only character-wise, but also I've heard that the plastics might be different,
component
too.
Quality.
The component quality. So we will probably have to do a review of one and then have maybe do like a comparison video. Melissa is working on her How to Play Titanic video.
Yes. So if you haven't heard, Spin Master has done a game based on Titanic the movie. Mm-hmm. And this is designed by Daryl Andrews and Adrian...
Adamescu.
So designers of Sagrada.
Yes.
So well-known designers, people who make good games. And Kevin and I had a chance to play this. We're going to do a how to play video. Well, I'm going to do a how to play video.
I'll help her.
You're basically trying to save passengers, but you also have to get off the Titanic before the game ends or none of your points count. And it is an action selection
game. Which would
make
sense. If you died, then your points wouldn't count.
Yeah.
And I felt it was thematic to the movie. There are cards that you can draw, and they have... It's not pictures from the movie or anything like that. It's more representative.
Right.
But like, some of them are tasks that you can do to get points.
I pulled a card that if I sang My Heart Will Go On, I got 5 points.
Yes.
And if people started singing with me, they each got a point. So
wow.
Did they know that?
I sort of led them on.
There was someone who had to hold on to the table and say something like, don't let go.
Will you promise not to let go? Promise me that you won't let go.
There's so many memories flooding back
from so, yes,
my high school years.
The titles on the cards and things bring back key scenes and moments from the movie, and you get to play as the characters. So Rose, Jack, mm-hmm. Cal. Who would want to play as Cal?
The captain.
Captain, and then another girl.
Yeah, I don't forget all the characters, but yep. So you can play up to 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be mayhem. Phew.
But yes, it sinks Rose Flood throughout the game, so you have to progressively keep going further up.
Yes.
On the Titanic.
Is there a large door or other floating item at the end?
Let's talk about this.
There is a door. Whoever. It's a tile. First person to 20 points gets the door. If you are playing three players or more, that player does not have to make it onto the lifeboat at the end. They will be safe. But they don't get any extra points.
Right.
So the lifeboat, we played a 4-player game. The first person to lifeboat gets like 5 points. The next person gets
3.
And then the last person gets negative 4 points. Or if you don't make it on at all,
right,
you don't count any of your points because you went down with the ship.
But you can't fit 2 people on
Wait.
No. It even says somewhere
There's a card that was just randomly in the box that says, like...
You're the one who had it, Kevin.
It literally said, you'd think 2 people could fit on this.
But they can't or something.
Winky face. It was hilarious.
So there's a Heart of the Ocean token, which is the
jewel.
The jewel. Mm-hmm. And whoever's in last place gets that, and they get an extra action. So mm-hmm. a lot of thematic things.
Lots of thematic things. it looks like we're going to do some videos for some of the games we talked about, like Funky Fruit. We'll have some videos, a live playthrough of that and preview. So check that out as well on our YouTube channel. And I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do it this week, but hopefully we'll be getting a copy of the Harry Potter House Cup competition game. Ooh. Amy Eggs is excited about that. Melissa's excited about that. So hopefully we'll get that soon. And we will
I'll be wearing my Ravenclaw shirt.
Wait, when we play. Do you have any Harry Potter themed t-shirts? Do I have any?
Do you have a house affiliation?
Gryffindor?
Okay. Gryffindor shirt.
Larry's Ravenclaw.
Okay. I have a Gryffindor shirt. Melissa has Ravenclaw. So we need to get some Slytherins and Hufflepuffs in here.
Nah, we're fine.
I'm not a Hufflepuff, but I could be a Slytherin if I needed to be.
Awesome. We might have to do that. Anyway, we will be doing a live playthrough. The app is sponsoring us to do that video as soon as we can get it and schedule that video. So look forward to that as well. Man, I think that almost wraps up our podcast, but we need to talk about a couple other things. Like last episode, we talked about the survey that just went out that people can enter for a chance to win a prize pack and just give some feedback on some of the things that we could improve on and things that you are interested in that we are producing every week. I know Amy is starting the Tantrum House Twitch channel. Tell us
hopefully
a little bit
this week.
Hopefully this week.
Yep. We are wrapping up the final pieces that we need. We're going to plug them all in and hopefully get some videos out there.
We're going to do some video, like video games.
Video games.
And maybe some board games.
Maybe some board games.
Oh, all right.
Got some ideas.
Got some ideas going on. We're working on some camera work on that end. So we'll definitely keep you up to date on the Tantrum House Twitch channel. That will be mainly Amy and Larry, but we'll maybe jump on once in a while too and say hi. So
if we let you in our house,
we're just going to come on.
So Kevin, how does somebody find our survey?
There's a couple different ways. We have posted it on social media. There is a button on our website, tantrumhouse.com, that says survey, and they can click that as well. That should still be there. Sarah's checking. I saw it there this morning.
It'll be there this week.
Will probably took it down or something, but it's there. There was a survey button that you can click, and then you'll be entered for a chance to win. And we'd love for you to fill that survey out as well after you give out all the information that you need to. So awesome. If there's nothing else, thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support. We appreciate it. Check out all the cool stuff happening on all our social medias, YouTube and Twitch now and stuff like that. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's Barry, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.